Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Psychology of Video Games podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Madigan. I've made it my mission in life to popularize the use of psychology to understanding video games, their design, how people act when they play them, why they do what they do. To accomplish that, in part, every episode of the podcast, I interview an expert at the intersection of psychology and video games. This is the episode about what psychology has to say about parenting and video games. Just a quick reminder, there is also a website, psychologyofgames.com, that goes along with this podcast. If you go there, you can find out all kinds of information, literally hundreds of different articles that I've written over the years about psychology and video games, dozens of episodes of the podcast, information about how to subscribe to either, and information on how to contact me and follow me on social media. You can also go to patreon.com/POG, that's for Psychology of Games, to find out how to support me there. One of the best things about publishing my book, Getting Gamers, the Psychology of Video Games and Their Impact on the People Who Play Them, has been that I got invited to speak or simply stand around at some really cool events. One of them was the Annapolis Book Festival put on by the Key School in Annapolis, Maryland. I was invited to appear on a panel alongside Greg Toppo, a USA Today reporter and recent author of a book called The Game Believes in You, about how video games can be used in educational settings. It's also a good read. Greg and I had our panel scheduled to be in room 5 of the Mance building, which turned out to be a classroom for either Oompa Loompas or grade school students. It was a packed room, but everybody was sitting in those tiny child-sized chairs so that their knees were up around their shoulders. And Mr. Flippers, the class's pet turtle, looked on with what seemed to me to be great interest from the tank behind them. Not the most elegant venue, but we were still happy to be there, and we dove in. Turns out, though, we weren't quite prepared for what was to come. The panel discussion had been titled, Video Games, Helpful Tool or Harmful Distraction? And I had expected to get a chance to talk about the benefits of playing video games, maybe some information about some of the psychological tricks that games use and how to recognize them so that you can come at games on your own terms. You know, the kind of stuff that I do on the website and podcast. The moderator steered the discussion in that direction to start, but we quickly lost control of things. Turns out that most of the people in the audience were parents, and most of them had come to the panel with a bone to pick or an axe to grind. That is, they had decided that their kid played too many video games, and they wanted my help in particular with fixing that problem. They wanted me to illuminate the psychological trickery that game developers use to set snares for their children and how to cut them loose. Moreover, several of them seemed slightly offended that I didn't share their indignity over the whole thing. One guy in particular seemed really obsessed about outdoor activities and seemed to blame video games for his inability to kindle a passion for bass fishing, woodworking, and the stalking of mid to large size forest creatures in his son. When Greg and I tried to extol the virtues of games, this guy scoffed, and when I tried to answer their concerns with some very basic parenting strategies like set a timer, use screen time as a reward, prioritize homework and family time, another woman accused me of failing to deliver on the premise of the panel, to explain how games are a harmful distinction. She had apparently forgotten the helpful tool part of the title, as well as the question mark on the end. I will say that not everybody in the room was like that. Mr. Flipper seemed pretty chill, for example. And I had some fun conversations with people afterwards as I signed books. But the panel discussion itself was a super weird experience. Some of those parents weren't impressed with me, but do you know what? I get it. I get their concern. I get the concern over how video games might affect kids. I have two kids myself, and they play a lot of video games, which in hindsight is probably because of me. It's probably my fault. But are they missing out on some important developmental activities? Are they forming bad habits? Would they be healthier if they went outside to play more often? Sometimes even I worry about these things, and sometimes I tell my kids to do something else for a while. On a handful of occasions, I've even gone so far as to unplug the router and shove books in their pouting faces. But with these concerns, it's best to let evidence and data guide us to a set of solutions. And we do have data. Maybe it's not complete, maybe it's not perfect, but psychologists and other academics have studied these issues, and they have things to say about them. My guest on this episode of the podcast is a researcher who has written a book that's literally called A Parent's Guide to Video Games. And I wish it had been published for me in time to recommend it to Mr. Flippers and the other people at that Annapolis Book Festival. But it's out now, And we're going to talk about it in just a minute. All right, everyone, welcome to the interview portion of the podcast. I have another returning guest this episode, Rachel Coerts. Wait, did I say that right? It's Coerts.
You
right?
did.
Okay,
yes.
I got it right this time. So welcome back, Rachel. What are you doing here this episode?
Thanks for having me, Jamie. I'm here to talk about my new book, A Parent's Guide to Video Games.
Cool. So one of the last episodes we had you on, you had just published another book, The Video Game Debate. What's this one and how is it different?
Yeah, so The Video Game Debate was more of a scientific book. It was an edited book of a series of essays talking about video game effects. And when I published that book early this year, I'm pretty sure this is what I told you, how excited I was that parents will finally have, you know, the guide that they want. Yeah, they don't want to read it. It's 300 pages and it's very dense and it has no pictures and yeah.
No friendly graphics or colors or anything.
Right, exactly. It's boring, you know. It's good for undergraduates, which is fabulous. They seem to take to it, but yeah. For parents, you know, they want something they can pick up and put down, something that's real easy that helps them find exactly what they want. So I went back to the drawing board and that's when I created this new book, The Parent's Guide to Video Games.
Okay. So what's it about? What's somebody who reads it going to get out of it?
Well, it's a resource of information and advice for parents about how video games can affect our children physically, socially, and psychologically. So it takes kind of the heart of the video game debate and breaks it down into question and answers about what are the exact questions parents have. And the goal here was really to create not just a list of information and facts, but a practical guide for parents that they could take and they could integrate into their daily lives and hopefully quell some of the fears that still remain in terms of, oh, are video games ruining my children's lives and what can I do about it?
Yeah, that's a topic that comes up sort of whenever I mention the whole psychology games thing. It's something that even non-parents kind of want to talk about, like what effects are these things having on our kids? So it sounds like the video game debate was more of the scholarly, big, dense, like here's where you go for all of the information. And the new book, A Parent's Guide, is exactly what it sounds like. It's more targeted towards parents and the issues specific to them or that they raise.
Yeah. So it's specific to the exact concerns, you know, after speaking with parents about what are you concerned about? What concerns do you still have? And addressing each of those questions in turn. So you don't have to read about, you know, every study that Chris Ferguson has done on violence in video games. I'm just going to tell you overall, this is what he has found in, you know, in his research, that sort of thing.
Okay. So what are the topics? What are the greatest hits?
Well, it's funny because when I was coming up with the list of topics, I was, you know, largely inspired by the video game debate. So you have the big ones, addiction, aggression, cognitive development, physical and mental health, games and learning. But after talking to parents, it was really interesting because those are also their top concerns, but they were also really concerned about sexism and misogyny, which I think because of, you know, the recent developments in the news has really become at the forefront of their mind, especially parents of daughters.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a timely topic. Yeah,
it is. So that got integrated into the parent's guide, even though there's not a whole lot of research in that area.
It's just starting, though. I'm starting to see more and more, you know, throughout the year, I kept seeing things crop up in my Google alerts and other places that I keep an eye out on research on that stuff. You know, at conferences and stuff, it seemed to be a topic that people were talking about. So yeah. Did you talk to other parents? Like, how did you go about either fleshing out that list or verifying that, yeah, this is the table of contents that this book needs?
Yeah. Well, I did talk to other parents. I have a daughter, as you know, who's two. So I have a lot of parents of young children in my circle now. And also,
it's funny how that happens, right?
Oh, you know, I didn't used to know anyone with young children, and now I know a bunch. I also reached out via social media to other parents and just kind of said, like, hey, what kind of questions do you have? And all of my old friends from high school who I haven't talked to in ages on Facebook all had questions for me. So I kind of collated that. And it was really interesting because talking to parents, I think we take a lot for granted kind of being in this field and up on the research because there seems to be no kind of consistency in what different parents actually know. with the exception of clinging to the kind of sensationalized headlines about video game effects. So almost all of them at least somewhat believed that there's a direct link between violent crime and violent video game play.
Wow.
Yeah, even though in the scientific community...
There's no evidence. Yeah, there's nobody's been able to do good research on that question, and we don't have any evidence that there is.
Right, but they all at least believe that's somewhat true. So that was really interesting. So talking with them about that and figuring out, like I mentioned, the specific questions. So like violent video games and violence. Obviously, I knew I wanted to talk about that. But when talking to the parents, there was also concern about desensitization issues with playing violent games, which is probably something I wouldn't have talked about if I hadn't talked to the parents and found that that was a large concern.
Did they suggest anything that you hadn't thought of on your own? Was anything added as a result besides that one subtopic?
Well, the sexism chapter I wasn't going to include just because of the lack of breadth of research. And also with parents, I added a FAQ. I know you have an advanced copy, and I don't think the FAQ is even in the version I sent you. But there was a lot of kind of basic questions, you know, what are online games, or how do I choose appropriate games? Like, what are the age ratings? What are the content descriptors? So I ended up adding a small frequently asked questions in the back just so to get everyone on the same page with the basic information. Again, the stuff that people who play games a lot may take for granted as common knowledge per se. But a lot of parents just still are uncomfortable. They don't know how to make the best choices for their families.
So did you find any differences amongst people who maybe were gamers themselves and the issues that they were interested in versus people who had never played games or not played them since they were kids, but their kids are starting to get into them? Were there differences there?
Yeah, I think that the gamers themselves were more into the big issues, addiction and aggression. And the parents who had no idea had more of a wide range of concerns. Maybe it just represents a greater anxiety about the unknown. But that's when you'd get questions about, well, what about its contribution to obesity? Or what about its links with anxiety and depression? So it was kind of interesting to see the differences between kind of just real focus like, oh, addiction, aggression, these big things I hear in the media all the time versus I'm concerned about everything. Just talk about everything.
Give it all to me. I need to justify my anxiety. Let me know.
Exactly.
But it actually turns out that maybe the book doesn't necessarily justify the anxiety that a lot of parents have. The chapters that I read, like a lot of them would say like, look, no, it's fine. Your kids are going to be fine. And maybe there are some issues where, yeah, exposure to this kind of content has some short-term or mild effects. And maybe there are some warning signs that you should look for. But generally, it was kind of an optimistic book about the effects that games have on people, or at least the negative ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to say games are perfect and wonderful, even though I like them. But it's more, this is what the science says. It is far more good than bad, or at the very least, far more neutral than bad. When you look at kind of the wealth, I mean, these are hundreds, thousands of studies that have been done. And it really all leans towards more, you know, everything in moderation, it will be okay, versus fire and brimstone and doom and gloom and horror. And like we often see sensationalized.
Right. So were there any topics where you just kind of had to like shrug and say like, hey, we don't know, or we don't have a good grasp on this, or nobody has been able to study this?
Maybe a little bit like you mentioned with the violent crime. I mean, there isn't really direct research linking it because it's really hard to say.
Almost impossibly hard. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I do talk about, you know, general rates. You know, we know the general consumption of what we call violent video games is increasing, and the general prevalence of crime among youths, violent crime, is decreasing. So that could be used as, you know, some sort of evidence to say they're probably not directly linked. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't really able to delve into the research because it's not really there. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I appreciated about the book was, like you said, it doesn't truck so much in like opinion or sensationalism. Doesn't do that at all. In fact, it's like just very straightforward in terms of like what the research is. Not in like a boring way or in an academic way, but kind of straight up, just like, here it is. When you set out to like write this book, can you talk about some of the guiding principles for deciding like how to present that information and like what tone you wanted it to have?
Yeah, I think that having writing it in an accessible way was the hardest challenge. Anyone who's been academic writing for a long time knows how hard it is to write to someone who's not an
Yeah,
academic
they
as
train
well.
you to be inaccessible. They train you to be to use lingo and styles of writing that are very specific and that will impress editors and aren't necessarily meant for public consumption.
Right. And my husband reads it and he's like, I do not know what you're saying. You cannot say it this way. So I did my very best to just kind of step back, take a deep breath, and say, what are the facts? Let's look at the questions. How can I most directly answer this question in a way that makes sense? I didn't want to get into the nitty-gritty. I just wanted to talk about these are the broad findings. And hopefully I achieved that goal. I think that that was truly the largest challenge of writing
Yeah.
this.
How did you do that? What strategies or checks or balances did you put in place to do that?
I think that starting with the question and answer style of the book helped a lot. Just by having that guide my answers very specifically. Let's only talk about do violent games desensitize you to violence? Let's only talk about depression and anxiety. And having a good copy editor. I guess that's my other secret. But my copy editor was hilarious. I made a sentence in there saying it's not all fire and brimstone, like I just mentioned earlier. And they commented, I'm not sure you want to say that. Fire and brimstone, it's really talking about entering the gates of hell. I think you want to use something a little less damning. I was
Yeah. Any other like strategies or ways? Because I mean it does seem like the biggest problem, especially with somebody like with your background in academia and your training to cross that gap. And I often wonder, like, man, when I pick up a copy of like the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology or Media Psychology, like, why isn't it written? Maybe not like this book. Maybe that would be too far given who reads those journals, but like, why isn't it written in a much more understandable, skimmable way?
I mean, I think I just really kept reinforcing myself. The guiding principle here was to inform parents and be able to empower them with the knowledge, not just give them a list of information, not just give them a list of facts, but present it in a way in which they could take it, absorb it, and use it. I didn't want to make something that's just like, oh, that's interesting, but it has no relation to my everyday life, which is, a lot of the academic articles. They don't have relation to our
Yeah,
everyday
they have
life.
relation to this person's career and her search for tenure and
And yes, and scientific thought.
yeah,
But
and it seems like they, whenever you read those academic works, they kind of go through a checklist of like, okay, or like a very specific structure, like this is the argument I want to make, and so I need to lay these foundations and I need to define these things. And like the biggest eye roll for me whenever I start reading an article and they say, first we need to define play, or first we need to
Oh
define
gosh.
game. I'm like, oh my God,
I know.
no, we
I know.
don't.
But I guess for the history of science and for replication purposes, I understand. I mean, maybe not play. Play has been defined so many times, but God.
Yeah, and you can say those things, and I can't disagree, but I still hate
I know. I
it.
know. But for this book, we didn't want to do that, right? I
Yeah,
didn't want to do that. That's not necessary.
that's not the audience. Right. So, how did you go about sort of separating opinion and what people would just sort of be tempted to call common knowledge or it is known, Khaleesi, like these types of things from like statements or facts or findings that are supported by actual research?
Well, I think as I mentioned when I talk to parents, there seems to be no common knowledge, like nothing that's
Okay.
consistently shared across, parenting groups. So really the only thing consistent was either a lot of stories about games being horrible and bad, or a lot of stories about games being amazing and perfect, and they can teach you everything, and they're fabulous in the future. And those are really the only two schools of thought that were consistent. So I just try to start from square one and take nothing for granted. Let's just start with the most basic of information. I think I even define like a violent game would be a game that contains this. So
Yeah.
this is what we're starting with. So a little bit like the articles, but hopefully not as annoying.
Not that I could tell.
Good.
That's an interesting point about hearing the two camps, the two sort of extreme camps of like the either they're wonderful and they're the best thing and you should be playing more of them versus they're terrible, they're dangerous, you should really watch it. do other like types of media have those that much of an extreme separation between viewpoints? I mean, I don't hear people talking about movies or television or anything else like that. I guess maybe the only other one I could think of is like online, you know, use of the internet in general.
Oh, that's even worse, Jamie. Let's
yeah,
like,
come
internet,
to think
that's
of it.
terrible. I think in the past, though, right? So video games have are in a long line of things that are horrible and will ruin your life. When television came out, there was definitely the television is horrible. It will rot your mind. It'll make you go cross-eyed, you know, whatever it was,
right.
The argument. So I think it's just the one in line currently that's kind of receiving that sort of condemnation. It's slightly changing now because we also have like that positive side, the games and learning side.
Mm-hmm.
And people also came around to television as well as being able to, you know, impart knowledge and teach things and be useful in some way. So
it's just by virtue of being new, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
VR will be next. Yeah.
Yeah. It already is. Yeah. I guess that makes sense. Like you can go back to like the 1800s to like the New York Times and find editorials about people saying how like crossword puzzles were going to ruin the minds
right.
of housewives and playing chess was terrible for youths because it limited their creativity and so forth. So, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Right. And now parents are like, please play chess and please
exactly.
do crosswords. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so ironic because those are things that now we think of as like, oh, you look at the big brain on this guy over here
yeah.
doing this crossword yeah. puzzle while playing speed chess.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the positive stuff, because you do have chapters on like learning and relationships to health that at least are partially optimistic and positive. What did you find there? What were the sort of consistent messages that come out of the book there?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure to talk about games and learning. I feel like how games can help to hone certain kind of cognitive skills like hand-eye coordination and visual spatial skills. That's something that we read a lot, you know, in blogs and even, you know, some news articles. So I wanted to be sure and touch upon that research,
mm-hmm.
but also talk about other things like unintentional learning. I have a whole chapter in the book about this.
So what is that? What is unintentional learning? Define your terms, Dr. Cohen.
Oh, no. It's learning things from playing games that the game is not directly trying to teach you. So
okay.
when I was a kid, this will age me, whatever. I played Math Blaster. I don't know if anyone else played that game. I actually thought it was quite fun. But usually games
Nerd.
That teach you to learn something specifically,
right.
They're boring. Nobody wants to play them. But games themselves are really good learning tools. They're fun. They challenge you. They challenge you incrementally. So as the further you get in, the more it challenges you. And through this process, you can absorb a lot of information. So in the book, I talk about playing Civilization. I played that a lot as a kid. I learned a lot about world leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I learned about the wonders of the world, you know, long before I learned about them in school. So I really wanted to highlight that growing field of study about these different things, like not just facts, but also, you know, problem solving skills, abstract thinking skills, creative thinking skills, all of these things can be honed just from playing games and navigating the different challenges that are in them.
So how much research is there that says that learning those skills in games is going to transfer to other areas of life? That if you learn to be a good problem solver and optimizer in Civilization, that you'll be able to apply that to like, you know, your schoolwork or your job?
Right. Well, there's some. I wouldn't say there's a lot. Mostly the research has focused on the transfer of leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
So if you practice leading groups in online games and, you know, fail or succeed, whatever it may be, you're learning these skills and these skills transfer. In general, the transfer of knowledge from one domain to another is not one to one. But
mm-hmm.
that's also why we don't learn to kill people in GTA and then know how to kill people, right? So it's, you know, a double
edged sword. Well, we already know how to kill people.
Well,
that part's easy.
But, you know, you have to take the good with the bad. So the good
yeah.
does and can transfer, but not, you know, you're not going to be all of a sudden amazing at solving
driving
every
a car
puzzle you encounter. Yeah, because you played
right.
some puzzle games.
So that's an interesting point about the leadership skills. I guess those sort of may be more transferable because you're dealing with people, right? If you're the leader of a of an MMO guild or a competitive, team and like league or something like that, then the things that allow you to be good at that are dealing mm-hmm. with people and organizing schedules and delegating responsibilities and those sorts of management and leadership abilities.
Right. I think it's more equivalent to what you would do to lead groups in mm-hmm. an offline setting. So unlike, figuring out the puzzles in Zelda, those are not directly transferable. I'm not going to encounter those same puzzles walking around in the world.
Thank God. Yeah.
I know. I would never get anywhere. I need my husband everywhere I go. But the leadership skills, those are, like you said, the same, making schedules, working with people, organizing people, figuring out, approaches, yeah. trying new approaches.
That's motivating people. And
motivating people, getting them on time, getting them to the raid on time.
Resolving conflict. Yeah. Guild drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that'd be a really interesting space to like keep an eye on and explore. And it even has some direct implications for like measuring those skills, because, in the world of work psychology, industrial organizational psychology, that's kind of my wheelhouse. We have these very elaborate assessment centers, we call them, where people will come in and they will role play being like, a salesperson dealing with an irate customer or a manager trying to work out a schedule for somebody that wants to take off and go on vacation, but it conflicts with this other thing. And people being upset and people being difficult, and sort of measures your leadership skills, like your ability to handle situations that a supervisor in this position will need to do. And to the extent that like that could be measured in a controlled setting in a video game or a game-like environment, or even more sort of far out is like this idea of taking data from the world that's already out there, like your performance in a massively multiplayer game, or looking at like text chat logs and seeing the frequency mm-hmm. of different kinds of words that you use and being able to have artificial intelligence analyze that. Like I know for a fact that there are people working on these types of systems, and it seems mm-hmm. like they could intersect with video games in a very clever and interesting way.
For sure. And it's so interesting you say that, because now that you mention, I'm starting to remember that when I was doing my PhD, there were people doing studies like that using, private servers, World of Warcraft servers, putting people together and looking at the logs. I don't know if I've ever seen that kind of work published, but the interest was definitely there. That would be very interesting to do. Yeah. And affordable, more affordable than doing those seminars.
Yeah, just because so much of it is automated or takes place mm-hmm. in a virtual space instead mm-hmm. of a meet space. Where you have to carve out and have schedules and people.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Cool. So what are some of the other like uplifting or positive things that people will find in the book?
Well, I think that people might be surprised about some of the findings in relation to just general physical and mental well-being. I think there's a lot of, we know the stereotype is the overweight gamer, or the depressed and the anxious and the lonely mm-hmm. gamer. And I think that they might be surprised to find that the science, the research behind it is far more optimistic. Just taking obesity for an example, Williams did a study. It's quite old now, I guess, though. It's 2008.
Ancient. But, yeah,
I know. But he looked at the BMI, so the best body mass index.
Body mass index, yeah. It's basically a degree of like how chubby or fit you are. Yeah.
Correct. And that's a nice way of putting it. And he found that gamers were slightly overweight in terms of what the ideal BMI is, but they were not like obese. They wouldn't have qualified as obese, just slightly more overweight. So that is optimistic. I mean, I think that if you know gamers, you know that we're not all obese, but there is
just
that
like everybody
idea.
Else, there's a spread. Yeah.
Just like everybody else. Exactly.
It's almost like we're people.
Oh, almost. Not quite.
Was there anything that you cut from the book, or kind of put it another way, like if you were invited back a year or two from now to do like a special edition with added bonus material, like like what would be included, or what extra stuff? What didn't make it into this version of the book?
I started writing a chapter on social communities. Friends Myra from Tampere in Finland. He wrote a wonderful chapter in the video game debate about social communities. It might have been my favorite chapter in the book. It was really inspiring about the communities that form around, you know, play and games and, you know, the positive of, you know, influence it can have. But as I started writing it, I realized that that wasn't so much about video game effects. It was just me wanting to talk about this awesome research that I really like. So that got cut because I wanted to be sure I was, you know, staying on track with just, let's just talk about effects. That's not really an effect. That's just kind of something nice to talk about. So that got cut, unfortunately. But if you're interested, his article on the video game debate is very good.
Okay, cool. And you may kind of answer this question a little bit earlier, but maybe you can expand on it a little bit. Like, what are the biggest myths about video games that parents seem to have? I guess one of them would be the whole violence in video game things. Like, they run the risk of becoming violent if you play games. Like, what are some of the other ones that you found?
Yeah, that's the main one. And what's interesting about that even is a lot of the research, as you know, is about violent video game and aggression, because mm-hmm. that's more measurable. But the belief is really about the violent crime, the violent behavior. It's pretty ingrained. And, you know, I'm not 100% surprised because of, you know, the media coverage that games often get. Also, I think there was a lot of misconceptions about video game addiction, and that people seem to think that just playing a lot of video games means you are addicted.
Right.
Whereas having a true behavioral addiction really is something that has a debilitating effect in all areas of your life. It's not just about playing a lot of games.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple of podcast guests at this point about that whole idea of aggression doesn't just mean, addiction doesn't just mean that you do something a lot. Like, you could just be engaged or into something, but you set it aside. You know, I can quit anytime I want. That's kind of the joke, but
right.
And a lot of times it's the truth, and you may move on when summer break is over and the kids may stop playing as many games and so forth. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, to be an addiction, for the parents who are interested, it has to be persistent, you know, at least 3 to 6 months, you know, detrimentally affect your work, your friendships, your hobbies, your health, your well-being, all of those things. I played a lot of World of Warcraft back in the day. I've talked about this before in your podcast. Yeah. But I still was going to school. I still was working. I still had friendship networks, you know. So not the same as addiction. And then lastly, I think there's a lot of myths surrounding the social aspect of online games, which, as you know, is my jam. That's my area of expertise.
Right.
And a lot of concern that a lot of distinctions between online and offline friends, rather than an acknowledgement of kind of how these categories are really fluid, and we take our offline friends online and our online friends offline, and just kind of concerns about how online friends are less valuable and they're taking time away from our more valuable friendships, and kind of that whole argument.
Yeah, the whole idea of, like, playing games is a waste of time, even if they're doing it with other people. You know, even other people in the room with them, which happens a lot.
But especially if it's with other people not in the room with them, that's especially bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my daughter is, especially my older daughter, is a huge gamer. I think I created a Frankenstein's monster by getting her into gaming and playing games with her from when she was just a young kid. But what she'll do is she has another friend who is also really into games, and they will FaceTime on the iPad, and she'll set up the iPad next to the computer, and we'll play, you know, Overwatch or Don't Starve or Roblox or whatever game it is that they're into. And like, she'll do that for hours if we let her.
Right.
And
right.
I have less of a problem with it because she's interacting with a friend and she's, you know, strengthening that friendship and she's having a good time. And then when they have friends over, even, like, they'll sit in front of the TV and, you know, play Minecraft or whatever it is that they're into at the moment. But actually, like, when they do it in person, it seems like they get bored with it more quickly and they'll move on more quickly. I don't know what's going on there.
Interesting. And also, I think that you make an important distinction, because you can see that your daughter is playing with her friend because she's got her on FaceTime. But I think a lot of parents just kind of see their kid alone in a room with a headset on and are like, what are they doing in there? Are they playing with their friends? Are they playing with strange adults that are going to find out where they live? You know, those are real concerns that parents very much are afraid of. So,
yeah. And it's interesting, you didn't get so much into those types of things in the book. Like, you didn't say, like, here's the 10 commandments of cyber safety, or here's how to make sure that your kids are safe online. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That was another thing, I guess, that did get cut from the book. I did start writing a section on that, and then again decided that it was detracting from the point of the book, because I just wanted to talk about the effects. And I wanted to give advice to parents about understanding the science about effects, but not necessarily, you know, imparting my words of wisdom about internet safety.
Sure.
You know,
there are plenty of other good resources.
There are a lot of
that sort of
stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of going back to the playing with your kids, I think it's interesting because, as I mentioned, I created a bit of a Frankenstein's monster with my kids and gaming. And now, like, gaming creates this source of strife in our relationship. But it's different, I think, than a lot of parents, because it's mainly about who gets to use the computer. And, like, they're always on it, or they're always trying to kick me off of it when I'm on there trying to either work or play games, that sort of stuff. So, like, what advice do you have for parents in sort of interacting with their kids vis-a-vis video games?
I think the best advice I could give is being kind of intentional about it and being present. So by intentional, I mean, you know, being aware of the content of the games that you're bringing into your home. You know, it's not just about age ratings, but about also the content that's in the games. And being present, you know, I hear a lot of parents say, not so much I'm fighting for the computer, but more, I don't know what they're playing. I don't know what they're doing. You can play with them. Especially for the younger children, that might go over better. When I was a kid, my mom would play with my brother and I sometimes. We would play Mario. We were like 5, 6 years old. She would always die on what she called the first mushroom. Always the little Goomba. Still, 30 years later, still dies on that guy. But I know.
She needs some, coaching, some tips.
She needs some more games to improve that hand-eye coordination.
That's right.
But, you know, but I remember it so fondly. It's such a fun memory. You know, my dad never played video games, but if you don't want to play with them, that's fine. You can also just sit in the room with them. And that's twofold. One, you're spending time with your kids, you know, even if they seem distracted, they know that you're in there and showing an interest in what they're doing. And two, it also gives you direct knowledge of what kind of games they're playing. So if you're concerned about that, you can just sit there and watch and you can see what it is they're consuming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do that a lot with my older daughter, especially because she's into a lot of the same kinds of games that I am. Like at the moment, it's like Overwatch. And, you know, we both play a lot of that. So for competitive online first person shooter. And if she's playing, a lot of times I'll just like pull up a chair and I'll have my laptop and just kind of talking with her about what's going on. And then we really annoy my wife by talking about like meta strategies and like, the new patch is on the test server and you can go and they made these changes. And so dinner conversations get kind of weird there because my wife and my younger daughter are not into those types of things as much.
That's so great. I mean, a lot of parents, I think that video games have become like a real topic of argument, a lot of arguments about what are you playing, why are you playing, you're playing too much, I don't know what you're talking about, who are you talking to,
right?
And just by, you know, I know everyone doesn't want to play, but you're an exception, I think, but just by playing with them, you know, now you have something you're bonding over, something you can talk about, something you can do together. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, and I'm glad that she's into it, and the younger one is not as much, but she still plays a lot of Roblox. I don't know if you know about that. It's apparently like,
I'm in the Daniel Tiger stage. I am at the very beginning.
So Roblox is, I still don't understand exactly what it is, but it seems like a platform and you can go on there and you can play all kinds of different games, and it's all played through a web browser. And it's huge amongst younger people who we often refer to as children will get on there, and my younger will put on one monitor the Roblox game and she'll be playing that. And then in the other monitor on the PC, she'll bring up YouTube and watch people streaming or doing Let's Plays or other videos of them playing these games in Roblox. And so she is like way into like YouTube streamers and personalities, especially the ones that sort of target kids. That wait, that sounds weird to say target
that
kids.
That does not sound right.
No. Yeah, the ones that do shows that are appealing to kids, where they play like you know, Roblox and other types of games, and they're very expressive and so forth, just like any kids' TV show. Think like if the guy from Blue's Clues did a YouTube channel.
YouTube.
Like that's the kind of thing that she's into. And she's like really into it. And they had like career day at her school. And I had to have a conversation with her about like YouTube streamer, like maybe she should have a backup career option, you know, beyond that.
Oh, funny.
when she got it in front of the class and said that she wanted to be a YouTube streamer. Of course, I'm not going to rob her of that delusion just yet. You know, when she gets a little older, I'll say, you know, okay, maybe you need to, you know, have some other plans as well. Okay. So any other thing you wanted to mention about the book or any other message for people out there about it?
No, I think that I just want to make sure that parents know, you know, the biggest takeaway is that this is meant to inform you so you can make more informed choices, not just about the games that you bring in your house or the games that your children are playing, but also to be a little more critical of kind of the sensationalism about video games that we see in the media. You know, the other day I was watching the news and, you know, something horrible happened. I don't remember exactly. Lots of horrible things happened, but
that's kind of sad in and of itself. But
I know. Oh, it is. But the newscaster made some kind of comment about, I'm sure they played violent video games. And this was right when it happened. I think it might have been the Ohio High State University, the stabbing. But this was before any information was known. And it's become such a thing that people just say, and they think that it's, you know, they just say it, and it gets absorbed in the collective conscience. So
it normalizes it too, that like, this is a possibility because it's being talked about. Thus, it must have merit or it must be legitimate.
Exactly. And, you know, I made some effort, especially in the aggression chapter. I gave some examples of maybe research that is published by, you know, respected research teams that maybe doesn't necessarily use the best methods of terms of assessing aggression and violent crime, just to give an illustration of, even if you see that there is a study by a respected group of individuals, you know, you need to look at it critically and say, is this really saying that my child playing Call of Duty means that my child is more likely to commit crimes?
Right. Yeah, it seems like a very basic sort of science literacy and research literacy.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to consume research and understand what it says and the ability to be critical of it.
Exactly.
Which is lacking.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that I know how to do that because, you know, you and I are trained in it and we do it for a living. But there are other areas that I'm sure that I would fall prey to those same sorts of biases and use the same sort of mental heuristics to make sense of the world. You know, if I were talking about like a history, you know, for example, I might fall prey to a lot of the same things that people do when they read about psychological research or other types of things along those lines. So it's tough.
Right. Yes, definitely. And, you know, not everyone is meant to be an expert in deciphering scientific articles. Yeah. So it's just more of like a little cheat sheet of like these are just the things you should look out for, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way. A cheat, maybe sheet would be selling it short, but a cheat resource.
Yes. Look at. There you go.
Very cool. So what do you think's next? What are you going to work on next?
I don't know. I think that we'll stick with the book for now. This was, you know, a long time coming, and just see what happens.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate you coming on and tell us about it. It's an interesting, and I think that anybody who even people who are the types that listen to this podcast would find some stuff, valuable stuff, information about it. So it's called A Parent's Guide to Video Game by Dr. Rachel Kowert, K-O-W-E-R-T.
Well, thank you, Jamie. That was great.
Hey, you've made it to the end of another episode of the Psychology of Games podcast. I appreciate it. Appreciate you sticking around. And before I sign off, just one last reminder that you can always go to psychologyofgames.com. And there you can find out more information about the website, and you can find out how to follow me on social media and contact me. You can find out about the book, You can find dozens of other episodes of this podcast and literally hundreds of articles that I've written about the psychology of video games over the years. So make sure to go do that, psychologygames.com. And you can also find out how to support me on Patreon by going there or by going to patreon.com/POG for Psychology of Games. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next episode.